The following audio is from Hope Hill Church. To learn more about Hope Hill Church, please visit hopehillchurch.org.
I get a feeling if we could all go back to that age, the world would be so much better off. I was waiting in line at the DMV some time ago, and a little child about that age was just wandering around talking to everybody. There wasn't a stranger in the place as far as she was concerned. She was just talking to everybody. And the parents, I think, were getting a little bit embarrassed that their daughter just, you know, person to person, seat to seat. And I said, you know, why can't we all be more like that? As we grow up, we start keeping to ourselves. We start distrusting the person next to us. And we don't dare want to talk to somebody because of, I don't know, we put this little fence around ourselves and we become so much more guarded. But I think Jesus on several occasions commented about the little children, and I just see so much genuineness and openness in their lives that I somewhat envy. How many here went to Nicaragua? Do we have some here who went? Yes, yes, good, good. John and Brandy are not back yet. They stayed for a few more days, and they'll be back on Tuesday, I understand. And then next week, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to hearing from everyone. I understand most of the service next week will be devoted to the sharing and the telling of testimonies of what happened in Nicaragua. So I think that's going to be a great week. So what we have now is a two-part series. I don't know that it was planned that way, but a two-part series on love. I'm going to start off today talking about love, and we can consider this part one of the two-part series. And then next week, all of you who were in Nicaragua and Pastor John and Brandon and his family will do part two and talk about putting love into action. I think it's going to be a great week. We spend a lot of time talking about love in church. It's a very core element, a very central element of who we are and of what we believe, especially since Scripture tells us that God is love. It's very important to us, and so we're going to talk about that some this morning. Our lives sometimes become very complicated and very cluttered. So many priorities, so many things going on in our lives, and so many people trying to pull us into different directions. Sometimes it's hard to remain focused on what's really important. And that's nothing new, even among us as believers in God. In the Old Testament, we know that God, through Moses, gave 10 commandments. And then those were expanded into other areas until there were over 600 laws in the Old Testament. 600 that were written, and then the rabbis and teachers expanded on that by writing commentaries and their own personal doctrines and pet peeves and what have you. And so the number actually went into the thousands. But there were at least 600 written laws that they were required to track and to obey. And so even for the scribes, the teachers, whose job it was to teach these laws, it must have been an overwhelming task to try to remind people on a daily basis. And they had some great ways of doing it. They would write scriptures on little pieces of paper, and they would tack them over the doorpost of their home. Or they would put them in a little leather pouch and tie it on a little bracelet around their arms or around their anklets. We have what would Jesus do bracelets. But that's nothing new. The Jews had those 4,000 years ago, and they were tying them in the little bracelets. Different ways of remembering Scripture and of what God has asked us to do. So one day, one of the teachers, one of the scribes came to Jesus. And he said, "Master, we know that there's over 600 laws and possibly more than that. which law is most important? And so Jesus responded to him by saying, the most important one is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord our God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. We spend a lot of time talking about God's love, and most of the time we're talking about the inflow. The flow of love from God to us. But this morning I want to look at it just briefly of love that flows in the other direction. What about our love back to God? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. I will admit that when I read this, I'm more than a little bit overwhelmed. Maybe I'm trying to be too analytical, but I try to apply that to myself and I say, now really, what does this look like? I'm not sure how to measure that. I mean, I go to church, I try to be good, I try to obey all 600 laws, but I don't really know about, I can't honestly say, about loving God with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. How about 90% of it? If I give God 90% of my heart, my soul, my mind, is that good enough? I really sometimes look at it and have to ask myself, how much of this is love? And how much of it is just me doing the right thing because I ought to? Is it really motivated by love and passion? When I was growing up, I had two uncles, many uncles, a very large family. Two of them, brothers, were construction workers, outdoor types, both of them very large, big framed guys. And both of them came to know Christ as Savior late in life. The first one, my Uncle Sammy, I'm guessing he was in his mid to late 40s when he came to know Christ for the first time. And I always thought of him, I mean, he was very big, very bulky, outdoors, construction, rough looking and rough talking. But I remember when my Uncle Sam accepted Christ, he cried. And that made a big impression on me. And he cried not just once, but he cried many times. People called him a ball baby, and that was not quite fitting with his character. But he loved to tell what God was doing in his life. And any time he could, he would tell you that God knew him by name and that God had saved him and that God had redeemed him and that God was changing his life. And he could never get through that story without crying. He was very passionate about it. He was very emotional about it. And he was fearless about it. So much so that there were some people in the family who just didn't want to be around him. I mean, he wanted to tell you, and he wanted to tell you up close and personal what God meant to him and what a change this was in his life. I also remember someone in the family making a comment to the effect, well, don't worry about it. Eventually he'll calm down and go back to being his regular self. And I remember thinking, what a shame. What a shame. I hope he never calms down. I hope he never goes back to being his old self again. But the thought was, and the perception was, that new converts get all excited about their faith. And they do get very emotional. And they're very into this, and they're very energetic about it. But the perception is that over time, we tend to lose that enthusiasm and that passion and go right back to being normal people. It's kind of like the marriage relationship. We go through the courting phase, and there's nothing crazier than two people in love. We go through the courting phase, and then the marriage, and then the honeymoon. I wish Pastor John was here so I could rib him about this. He's told this story. I'm sure that you've heard it. When he met Brandy at Liberty and how he would stalk her. He said he used to hide in the bushes and wait for her to come by just so he could see her walking across campus. Love is wonderful, isn't it? Problem is, we need something to keep that going. The problem is that over a period of time, the courting phase, the marriage, and the honeymoon, all too often, someplace down the road, there's an old saying about, well, I guess the honeymoon is over. That is so unfortunate. That is so unfortunate. The Bible tells us that we should set a guard on our hearts. Set a guard on our hearts. Because if we are not careful, the heart goes astray. And those things that are most important, including our relationships and our love, can go astray and turn south, and what used to be is no longer. Put a guard on your hearts. The evil one is out to steal your heart. He will plant seeds of thoughts, of ideas, of suggestions, of doubts, of deceitfulness, in your heart to steal away from that which you once loved and turning you cold and hard and indifferent even towards those that you have once loved the most. It's unfortunate. And just as it happens in our relationships with each other, if we are not careful, it happens in our relationship with God. And so at some point we may find ourselves just going through the motions. We're still going to church. We're still singing in between yawns. And we're doing all the right things to keep those 604 laws. But the love, the joy, the passion have long since grown cold and replaced by indifference. When I ask myself this question, and I do, and I sometimes, and in fact, I did this week as I was preparing for this message, God, really speak to me about this. Show me. How am I doing here, God? It's not a performance thing, but I really want God to open my heart. Because, you know, we can even deceive ourselves. We tell ourselves, I tell myself, you're a pretty good person. And if I'm not careful, I start to believe what I say about myself, about how good I am. Sometimes it's good to have another perspective. And so, God, really open up and show me my heart. Do I really love with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my mind? I got to tell you, there's a lot of things up there and not all of it's good. But there's not as much up there that used to be up there. There's gray hair, and there's not as much as that there used to be, and I have trouble remembering things. But even of what's up there, sometimes it gets confused and cluttered. And I think I just need to stop sometimes and ask for a checkup. I went for my physical this past week, and that always gets interesting as you get along in years. But a spiritual checkup. God, am I really loving you? Or am I just going through the motions? It's hard to separate the first commandment from the second, because as I start measuring and looking up and really analyzing how much I love God, it's hard to separate the first commandment from the second. And so when the scribe asked Jesus, "What is the greatest commandment?" Jesus gave it to him, but he didn't stop there. He went immediately into the second, because they are so closely tied together. And Jesus said, and the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. This story is recorded in Mark and also in Luke. And in Luke's version of the story, someone immediately then asked Jesus, okay, I'm supposed to love my neighbor. Who is my neighbor? And you probably remember Jesus' response. He gave him the story of the Good Samaritan. And in the story of the Good Samaritan, a gentleman whose nationality we're not told, but we presume he was Jewish, was attacked by robbers and was beaten up and was left on the side of the road, half dead. And along came several religious leaders from the church. A priest came by and saw the man on the side of the road, and he immediately said, "Ooh, I don't want to get involved. Who knows what kind of guy he is?" And so the priest crossed the road and went to the other side and kept on going. Now, we've made all kinds of excuses for that priest. Some said he was on his way to church, and he had important things to do at church, and he needed to be there on time, and so that's why he didn't stop. Maybe even it was his Sunday to bring the message, and it was important that he be there on time, and so he didn't have time. And then there was a second religious leader who also came by and saw him and said, "Ooh, he's hurt, he's bleeding, he's bloody, I don't want to get involved," and he went to the other side. And perhaps that was his Sunday to serve at the altar. Now, the Jewish law said you couldn't serve at the altar if you were unclean. And so if you touched a dead body or you touched a diseased or unclean person, then you were unclean and you couldn't serve at the altar. So maybe that was his reason. So we've made all of these excuses for those three people. But the truth is, they saw somebody in need and they just didn't want to get involved. And then along came a Samaritan, somebody of a different nationality, of a different race, of a different religious belief. And he was the one who stopped and got involved to a great extent. Jesus particularly picked the Samaritans because he knew how offensive they were to the Jewish. And he said, here is a neighbor. None of these were neighbors. The Samaritan was the neighbor. If Jesus were giving the illustration today, he might use some other people other than the Samaritans, because we don't really relate, but there are many other groups he could have used. This is one of my favorites. Matthew 25, Jesus said, "For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. I'll tell you, this is another passage that sort of tugs at my heartstrings every time I read it. If I were to read on the internet, because that's where I read everything, Jesus is coming to Woodbridge. He's going to be here at a certain day and time in this particular stadium, whatever. But you have to get there early because seats are going to be sold out, but Jesus is going to be there. You know what we would do? We would walk over top of each other to get there. No compassion, no love, just walk over top of each other to get there. But when Jesus says to me, I, Jesus, was thirsty and you gave me something to drink, and we know that in the parallel passages in there, he said to the goats on the left, I was thirsty and you didn't give me anything to drink. I was hungry and you didn't feed me. I was a stranger and you did not invite me in. What are you telling me? So who is my neighbor today? If Jesus were giving the story of the Good Samaritan today, he would probably not use Samaritans because they would be less known to us. But I'm convinced that he would pick out people right here in our own neighborhoods, in Woodbridge, in Prince William County. And he would give illustrations. The poor. They tell us that there are over 20 million people in America, not worldwide, just in America, 20 million people living in poverty, 4 million of them in what they call extreme poverty. Extreme poverty means that for a family of four, they're living on less than $10,000 a year. Family of four, less than $10,000 a year, 4 million of them in America, and a disproportionate number of them are children. Do I care? This is how I know whether or not I really love. Do things like that bother me? Do they bother me enough that I want to do something about it? The homeless. Each year, Prince William County tries to count the number of homeless, and it's hard to count them because they live in the woods, they live in their automobile. I personally know a gentleman who lived for a while in a trash dumpster. He found a dumpster that didn't get emptied on a regular basis, and that was his home. Prince William County says that there are 500 homeless in this county, including 100 children. There are 100 children who do not have a home of their own. They don't have their own bedroom. They don't have their own bed. They don't have pictures on the wall. They don't have their toys neatly stowed over in the corner. They're shuttled from one shelter to another, or they spend the night on a family member's floor. 100 children. Immigrants. You probably should leave that one alone because it's a hot button issue. Not only for me, but for many others, but we're not all on the same side of the hot button issue. We just agree that it's an issue. The political debates have happened, and this is like one of my worst times of the year ever, if my wife could tell you. But on the most recent debate, they tracked comments on social media for the next 2 days after the debate. And it was very clear that the number one issue on most people's minds was immigration. Last year, we were told that there were 75,000 unaccompanied minors, children. Last year, there were 57,000 unaccompanied children who came across the border all within like a four-month period of time. Created a crisis. Nobody knew what to do with them or where to put them. They ended up being housed in gymnasiums and military bases and shelters and any place that they could get them. It was a real crisis, and it was a crisis because nobody wanted them. There was a government facility in Maryland that had been shut down. It was empty. The National Guard owned it. They said, we could take some of them here. You know what the immediate response was? Local politicians and people, not in our neighborhood, you don't. Send them someplace else. Don't bring them here. Some of them were housed at Youth for Tomorrow, just not too far from here. And immediately when the politicians found out, they tried to bring legal action against them. Not in our neighborhood. Send them someplace else. So I checked this year. Last year was 57,000. We haven't heard much about it recently, so I checked. This year, the number is down significantly. There have only been 19,000. But that's 100 per day. 100 per day, children without parents or without chaperones, traveling on their own, looking for a better life. 100 per day cross the border. Do I care? They're not my children. My children have a home. They have a good bed and a place to stay. Incarcerated. I was in the doctor's this past week. I picked up a magazine. The lead story on the magazine was there are 2.3 million people in America today behind bars. 2.3 million people are behind bars. In America. Should I care? I mean, most of them are probably guilty. Why do I care? And I don't really understand why Jesus, when he was saying, I was hungry and you fed me, I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink, why did he have to go then put in there, I was in prison and you visited me? What's that all about? The elderly. I wish I had more time. The elderly. You know, when we look at this list, everybody in this room is in one of these categories, or you have been, or you will be, if you live long enough. You are, you have been, or you will be, if you live long enough. 4 million Americans are being treated for depression. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but if I were, many of you would raise your hands. Depression. 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 So when Jesus says to me, the first commandment is this, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, and all your strength. And the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. I tell you, I'm challenged. I'm challenged. And I do not have to go very far to find a mirror to hold up in front of me, because it's all around me. I have opportunities every day throughout the day to look and to say, do I really love? Do I really love God with everything, with every ounce of my being? Is God my everything, or is he just one of the more things that I've added on to all the other things? My wife and I have been purging our house, trying to get rid of some stuff. We have too much stuff. But it's not only our house, it's our lives. Our lives get full of stuff. And sometimes God and other people are just more things that get lost in the middle of all the other things. I pray today that God will show me each day. And if there are things in my life that I need to get rid of so that I can love better, if you go into a marriage with too much going on in your life, it'll ruin your marriage. You need to get rid of some of it. And likewise, if you're trying to walk with God with too much clutter, spiritual and emotional clutter in your life, you may want to take inventory and see if there isn't some stuff there that you need to get rid of so that you can focus on what's really important. If the worship team will come, and our communion servers and our prayer team, as we prepare to partake of communion, this would be a beautiful time to just search your heart and say, God, refresh my heart. Refresh my heart. If there are things in there that are crowding out God, if my love and passion have grown cold, I need a restart, a jump start. I guess the popular phrase is a reboot. Sometimes we just need a reboot to rekindle the fire. And by the way, husbands and wives, you can do that in your own relationships also. Sometimes you need to rekindle your fire for each other and say, God, this is too big for me. I can't do it. And allow God to come in with His transforming power to rekindle the love that you once had one for another.